Welcome in, welcome in. You are listening to WMUC FM Radio right here in College Park. My name is Jack Wynn. I am hosting your favorite weekly sports talk show, Winning Time. We're going to get into a whole lot of stuff today. The Super Bowl is this week, one of the most, you know, exciting and important sports events in the entire world. So a lot to talk about on that end. The NBA trade deadline is coming up. We've had a lot of news, even in the even with the teams in the NFL offseason right now. So, you know, no more need for an intro. We're just going to jump right into it. We're going with our Winning Time Super Bowl edition. Let's start. So, the New England Patriots take on the Seattle Seahawks in the Super Bowl this Sunday. It is a rematch of the Super Bowl from 2014 that famously ended in the Malcolm Butler interception and Tom Brady ending his 10-year drought of rings. And now, just after a playoff drought, Drake May tries to bring New England back. But we're going to start with the Seahawks. And we're going to take you through the stories of both these teams so that you understand exactly how they got here, what makes them so good, and what you can expect to see from them in the Super Bowl. Starting with Seattle, they have had an unbelievable season, surprising a lot of people before the year. The Seahawks, coming into the season, had big decisions to make during the off year. They were transitioning from their regime of Pete Carroll and Geno Smith. They traded Geno away. They took a big risk on Sam Darnold. John Schneider and Mike McDonald, the head coach and GM, gave him a big contract, and they said, look, we know Sam Darnold has talent. We know he's struggled in big spots, and we don't know if he's a franchise quarterback. But we're going to take a risk on him because we believe in him. And it worked out great. John Schneider and Mike McDonald have built an organization and a franchise that is ready to win, ready to compete, and ready to hit you hard. This is a team driven by old-fashioned football, running game, and defense. Kenneth Walker, their dominant running back, has been great in the postseason after Zach Charbonnet went down, their other running back. And you can't talk about the Seahawks without mentioning that defense and without mentioning Jaxon Smith-Njigba. The way that the Seahawks have put this team together has created a real juggernaut. Their defense is well-rounded. Their secondary is full of athletic, fast, really talented players. Their offensive line has looked better than it has at any point over the last half decade. JSN is having one of the greatest seasons in NFL history for a wide receiver. That is about coaching, that is about team cohesiveness, and that is about scheme. Mike McDonald has done an unbelievable job. It's why he's one of the favorites to win Coach of the Year. They draw up run plays that you can see are coming and can't stop anyway, because they're drawn up well. The linemen know exactly what they're doing. It's just a great coaching job all around. And what you need to know about the Seahawks is that through great team building, structure, and coaching, they have put together a dominant team. They were the one seed the entire season. Their defense has been absolutely stellar. They're going to play hard. They're going to hit you hard. They're physical. And their quarterback, Sam Darnold, is the biggest question. They faced the Rams twice in the regular season in unbelievable games, beat them again to go to the Super Bowl in yet another unbelievable game. This is a team that has proven it can play at a high level in big spots. It's not afraid of the moment, and they can beat you in so many different ways. What we've seen from the Seahawks, because of this roster construction that I've explained, they can beat you if their quarterback plays awesome. They can beat you if the offense is slow and the defense cooks you. Even if the defense has a bad game, they can now win in a shootout. So there are so many ways that the Seahawks can win games. They're just a really talented bunch, a really well-put-together bunch, and that's why they're sitting here in the Super Bowl. Now for their opponents. In the offseason, the Patriots were making transitions as well. They were riding second-year QB Drake May and trying to figure out which head coach would be the best fit for him. When they hired Mike Vrabel, some people said they should have gone with a younger offensive mind, but others said that his leadership and experience an understanding of the game of football would be enough to get this team to a higher level. And that's exactly what has happened. What Mike Vrabel has done to the rest of this team is unbelievably impressive as well. It's just as good of a coaching job as Mike McDonald, I would say. New England was dead in the water last year. They were 4-13, one of the worst teams in the league. And in one season, because the quarterback elevated and the coach got much better, they're in the Super Bowl. Drake May depends on his number one wide receiver, Stephon Diggs, although they have a very deep receiving core of other pretty talented guys as well to keep an eye on. Not to mention the Patriots' defense has been pretty stout for most of the season, especially this playoff run when they have given opposing quarterbacks real fits. So it's not going to be an easy matchup. These are two teams that are built very similarly, with one exception. I have said for the last half decade that the NFC is the conference of coaching and structure, and the AFC is the conference of quarterbacks. For 5-6 years, it felt like the Ravens, the Chiefs, the Bills, the Bengals, you know, Mahomes, Lamar, Allen, Burrow were all dominating the league. And in the NFC, you had teams like the Eagles and the Niners, who were known for their defense and their offensive line, not necessarily their quarterback. And once again, that script is playing out in this Super Bowl. Because the Seahawks are known for their roster construction, their structure, their coaching, the offensive, the running game, the defense. They don't depend on Darnold. The Patriots are completely Drake May dependent. And very often what we see in these situations is if the quarterback is able to overcome these differences in talent, the AFC team usually wins. Let's think about the last few years. Eagles-Chiefs last season. Again, the Eagles team was more about the roster than it was about Jalen Hurts. The Chiefs, much more about Mahomes than it was anything else. Mahomes wasn't able to overcome. They got blown out. The year before, Chiefs-Niners. Mahomes was able to overcome the structure of the 49ers. That defense, Brock Purdy wasn't the star of the team. And they won. What I'm getting at is this Super Bowl is going to come down. By the way, same thing with the Chiefs and the Eagles the year before that. It's a long-running trend. And so what I'm saying is this game is going to come down to Drake May. And when people ask who feels the most pressure in this game specifically, Drake is the answer. He's a second-year quarterback. This is his first time that he's ever been in the playoffs. It's his first Super Bowl. He's 23 years old. And the entire offense depends on him. Now, you can argue that the Patriots have won games the last few weeks with defense, despite Drake underperforming. And I would say, sure, you can make that argument. But the Seahawks are not a team that are going to just falter. The Seahawks don't get blown out. They don't make egregious mistakes. And even when they do, they're able to keep teams close. I don't think the Patriots are going to blow out Seattle. I think it's going to come down to whether or not Drake May is able to overcome Seattle's defense. And if he's going to, then he's in the conversation for one of the best quarterbacks in the league. He's already in the top five conversation. He would join that group with Mahomes and Allen and Lamar. Okay. So what is my prediction for this upcoming game? Because I've been mostly accurate. I had Rams over Patriots, and obviously I was one game short. At least that's what I had after the Chiefs dropped out halfway through the season, it seems. But one would then think that I would be leaning towards the Pats, because I've been kind of riding them for a few months now. I believe in them. I do think Drake May is a superstar. I do think he has the ability to be a top five, maybe top three quarterback. But that has to happen now. And I don't know if it's going to. I am going to predict, I'm rubbing my crystal ball, that the Seattle Seahawks will defeat the New England Patriots in Super Bowl 60 by a score of 27-23. I think that the Seahawks infrastructure at this point is too sound. And I think Seattle is not going to have a bad game. They haven't had bad games all year, and even when they've struggled for a half or struggled for three quarters, they've come back and either won it or kept it really close. So I don't expect Seattle to come out here and have some low-scoring affair. I think Darnold's going to be good. I think JSN has a really tough matchup against this Patriots secondary. Christian Gonzalez is a great cornerback, but JSN has had one of the best seasons in NFL history. They target him so much. You know they've had 2 weeks now to scheme him open, make sure that they're going to get him the ball. I think the Seahawks offense is going to be able to move. I think the running game is going to be effective. And I think if New England were to win, they would have to force multiple turnovers on Sam Darnold. And I just don't think that's what's going to happen. I think that Darnold has the most... Darnold is in one of the most interesting positions in the Super Bowl. And it's kind of been the position he's in for the last 2 years. Thinking about Sam Darnold's story, he was with Minnesota last year. They had a season very similar to the one Seattle had this year, up until the last 2 weeks. And in the last week of the regular season and the first game of the playoffs, Darnold fell apart. Now, he hasn't done that these playoffs. He's been really, really good, actually. It seems he may have overcome some of these demons. But once again, the onus is on him. He is the quarterback of this team. He is going up against somebody we know is going to be a superstar. Darnold cannot afford to mess this up. If he has one or fewer turnovers, I think the Seahawks win this game. I think they're going to score in the mid to high 20s, and I don't think New England is going to be able to put up 28 points on this Seahawks defense, especially the way that New England has looked so far this postseason. They had great team wins, defeating the Chargers and the Broncos despite the weather, but to win a Super Bowl against this team, you have to be spectacular. You cannot afford to make the mistakes that they have over the last few weeks. I think the Seahawks are going to make fewer. I think they're going to come out of the gate hot, and I think they're going to close hot. So I'll take Seattle 27-23, a bit of a scrappy one, but the Seahawks are in the lead for most of the game. All right. We are going to take a quick break. That was our Super Bowl prediction. Not the end of our Super Bowl coverage. Don't worry. We'll be back with hot takes, people with the most to gain, a lot more coverage on that end. But when we return, we are going to do NFL Hall of Fame coverage. Right back with you after this.
Are you looking for a club that celebrates friendship? Then Best Buddies might be the one for you. We organize social events for local folks with disabilities to come to campus and hang out. Some of our highlights of the past years have been our holiday parties, a polar bear plunge in the freezing Chesapeake Bay, our friendship walk with Best Buddies branches from around the state, and a winter formal with over 80 people. And if you want to learn more information, check out our Instagram at BestBuddiesUMD.
Care to Stop Violence is a campus resource housed in UMD's University Health Center. The care office provides free, confidential advocacy and therapy services for survivors of sexual assault, relationship violence, stalking, and sexual harassment. Survivors and their supporters can make an appointment with a trained advocate or call our 24/7 hot crisis line to speak to someone right away. Additionally, we work to empower the campus community to prevent power-based violence through educational presentations, events, and outreach activities. Learn more about our available services and programs by visiting health.umd.edu/care.
All right, welcome back. So, you only get news out of the NFL Hall of Fame really for a brief period a year. And it's these couple of weeks right before the NFL Honors presentations where The finalists are getting announced, the doors are being knocked on, and unfortunately, people are being left out. So, we're going to start with one of the biggest people who were left out of this year's class, which is New England Patriots legendary head coach Bill Belichick. And for those of you who weren't aware of the story or how this process exactly works, you need to get at least 40 out of 50 of the Hall of Fame votes. There are 50 voters. You need to get 40 out of 50 of them to vote for you to be a Hall of Famer. Belichick got 39. And it's not like, you know, it's one at a time. Is this person getting in? Yes or no. Each of the people are just writing three names down, submitting those votes, and they get tallied. If you get 40, you're in. Belichick couldn't. And for the 11 people who voted against Bill Belichick, I don't understand how they're allowed to cover sports, to be honest. I don't understand how they're allowed to cover sports. Because there are some people, some athletes, who, you know, if there was a way to streamline the process where you shouldn't even have to vote them in, you would think Belichick would be in that category. Tom Brady, yeah, of course, he's getting in. LeBron James, yeah, he's getting in. Peyton Manning, yeah. Bill Belichick won 6 Super Bowls. 2 more Super Bowls as a coordinator with the Giants. He's the greatest defensive mind in NFL history. There is only one possible reason for Bill Belichick to have missed the Hall of Fame. Think about it for a second. What other major sports legend is awaiting entry into a Hall of Fame or was denied entry into a Hall of Fame despite overwhelming greatness? Barry Bonds. Why is he denied? For cheating. Bill Belichick. These scandals are resurfacing. He has been involved in 2 major cheating scandals during his time in the NFL. From 2001 to 2007. That first stretch of Brady's career, that first initial run, Spygate was real. New England was illegally filming teams, scouting their playbook, knowing their signs, and they got punished for it. The NFL had to burn the tapes, by the way. They destroyed the tapes that had the footage on it. We're never going to know just how much they were recording. The second one, in 2014, the year that they beat Seattle in the Super Bowl, by the way, Deflategate. Found out at halftime of the Colts game, they were playing with half-deflated footballs. Now, again, you can argue how much this matters because, you know, that AFC title game against the Colts, it was 45-7, were slightly deflated footballs that were balanced out by the weather and the rain. Really the difference? Probably not. Could knowing signs and signals be the difference in any one of those close games for the first bunch of years? They won multiple Super Bowls by 3 points. So, if you're a Hall of Fame voter, and you're thinking, this is one of the greatest coaches ever, I would be a fool not to vote him into the Hall of Fame because of how successful and how legendary he is and how important he is to the history of the NFL. They say that to get into the NFL Hall of Fame, they need to not be able to tell the story of the league without mentioning you. Well, obviously that's the case for Belichick. You have to talk about him when you tell the story of the league. So for a player that great, to snub him for cheating is fair. And it's the only possible justification. I still would have given it to him, because, like I said, he's the greatest coach of all time, and he won so much despite all of the other outside circumstances that we've talked about. But if you want to ding him for cheating, then I get it. What I would really not like to hear, any other justification for not voting for Belichick is absurdity. If you want to say, oh, you know, he was terrible with the Browns, he was terrible without Tom Brady, sure, but That is not reason to leave him out of the Hall of Fame. He had a bit of an embarrassing exit from the NFL, sure. Not reason to leave one of the greatest coaches, if not the greatest coach of all time, out of the Hall of Fame. If you want to ding him for cheating, fine. But we cannot make a fool of this Hall of Fame. The NFL Football Hall of Fame is one of the most important Hall of Fames that we have. Think about the other ones. In the NBA, the Basketball Hall of Fame, it's a joke. Anybody can get into the Basketball Hall of Fame. Tony Kukoc is a Basketball Hall of Famer. The NFL, it's more prestigious. It's harder. It's rare. You don't want to leave Bill Belichick off of a ballot just to get other people in because you think they should. Bill Belichick is obviously a Hall of Fame player. The only reason not to vote for him is to ding him for cheating. All right, we got two more people to talk about on this Hall of Fame end. I spent a lot of time on Bill, so we can speed up, even though I'm going to want to spend a lot of time on this guy. Another player, connected to this era, by the way, connected to Belichick, who was left out of this year's class is Eli Manning. And it made me sad. To be honest, when Eli retired from the league, I was banging every wall, every table, saying that he had to get into the Hall of Fame. But the last two seasons, I've understood. The classes have been pretty good. This year, it was going to be really hard for Eli to get in. Next year, it's going to be hard for Eli to get in. But does that change the fact that he should be a Hall of Famer and that he is a Hall of Fame player? No. Say what you want about the interception. Say what you want about some of the losing seasons at the end, the career record, whatever. Eli Manning is somebody you cannot tell the story of the NFL without. The 2007 Patriots were going to be the greatest team in the history of the league. He beat them on a game-winning drive in the Super Bowl. And then when he got his rematch against the greatest player of all time again in 2012, he beat him again. Those two playoff runs are two of the greatest playoff runs of all time. The only players in NFL history to win multiple Super Bowl MVPs, by the way, are all in the Hall of Fame already. Except for Brady and Mahomes, who I would imagine are getting in. Eli is the only one who's left out. Eli Manning is also top 10 all-time in passing yards and passing touchdowns. He had one of the longest streaks in NFL history of consecutive games started. He was an Iron Man. Before Eli got to the Giants, they had made the Super Bowl and gotten crushed a half decade prior, but they had been dead in the water since Parcells left. Eli revitalized that franchise. He was a leader. He was great in the media. He was exactly what you want. He was playing games, bloody, beaten up, and still coming through in the fourth quarter. One of the clutchest quarterbacks we have ever seen. One of the greatest playoff quarterbacks we have ever seen. That is a Hall of Famer. And somebody you cannot tell the story of the league without. I hope he gets in. So those are the two snubs, but I do want to take a minute to appreciate someone we do know is getting in, and that's Drew Brees. Drew Brees had... People seem to view Drew Brees one of two ways. Either he was one of the greatest quarterbacks ever, one of the highest level quarterbacks ever, or he was just legitimately all-time great. I view him in that second category. I think he's got that back end of the top 10 rather than that first end of the top 10. And either way, he had an amazing career. He's second all-time in yards and touchdowns for a quarterback. One of the most accurate passers we have ever seen in the history of the league. Won a Super Bowl against Peyton Manning. He did have three losing seasons in his prime. He was unable to kind of overcome some of the structural issues in New Orleans ever since the Super Bowl. But his legacy is one that is enshrined forever. He's one of the most accurate passers the league has ever seen. A Super Bowl champion. A league MVP. Drew Brees, NFL Hall of Fame. All right, we're going to move into a little game now because, as I mentioned at the top of the show, there's been news with the teams outside of the playoffs right now. There's been a lot of head coach hires, some moves, some draft news. But what we're going to do is play a game that I like to call Trust or Bust. We're not going to do it with draft prospects. We're going to do it with head coaching hires. So here's how it's going to work. I'm going to run through 5 head coaches. I'm going to tell you if I trust them or if I think they're going to bust in their new location. This is a game we're going to play with the draft as we get closer, combine, mock drafts, all of that. We'll figure out the prospects we trust the most or who we think is going to be a bust. But for now, we're talking about the NFL head coaches. Starting off, Joe Brady with the Buffalo Bills. I think this one's going to be a bust, to be honest. I like the Bills. I think the Bills had arguably the most enticing head coaching job of the offseason, just because of the greatness of Josh Allen and what he's able to overcome. But Joe Brady, I don't think, is the guy to do it. And it's for a very specific reason. You are at your clearest right when something ends. You understand exactly how you are feeling in that moment. Once time starts to pass, you start to kind of lose track of that. How was I feeling? What was I thinking? Immediately after the Bills season ended, the owner and the GM came out and said, look, we're firing the head coach because we need to change up the culture. We need to make some sort of move because we can't keep doing the same thing every season. Well, if that's the case, then hiring Joe Brady is a bad call. The hire on its own may have worked. You can argue that the Bills' offense has improved since he was hired as the offensive coordinator. And now bringing in another defensive coordinator in Jim Leonard that'll pair well with him. That may be a good idea, but that's not what the plan was. In the moment, the Bills said, we need to change something up. We cannot keep running this back. So they get rid of McDermott and they promote the guy who's already been there. It feels like running in place. So I don't love the hire. I think Brady might bust, and I feel bad for Josh Allen if he's going to have to move on to another coach in a few years, because that means it's just going to be another few seasons of knocking on the door and not being let in. All right, next. Clint Kubiak with the Las Vegas Raiders. So I love this hire. I think that this one is going to... I trust this one. And it's for a few simple reasons. First of all, Kubiak has been a really smart offensive mind. He has proven it with his play calling. He has proven it with the impact he's had on the Seahawks offense, the way he's worked with Darnold, the way he's able to get the absolute most out of the players that he's given. And with the Raiders, the format is pretty simple, to be honest. The defense needs a lot of work. The offensive line needs a lot of work. You're building around Fernando Mendoza, who you're going to take first overall, your running back Ashton Jeanty, and your star tight end Brock Bowers. If the Raiders were to become competitive, that's the big three that's going to take them there. And for Clint Kubiak, I think he's going to do a very effective job at getting the most out of those guys, those playmakers, building up the offensive line in the first year he's back. And then the defense comes along eventually. You know, this isn't a Raiders team that's going to compete this season, I wouldn't think. But maybe the year after. If you get the coach and you get the young quarterback right, it's pretty hard not to compete within those first few years. So I trust this spot. Next, Mike McCarthy with the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think this one's a bust as well, unfortunately. Look, I like Mike McCarthy, but once again, you have to ask yourself, how was I feeling right when the season ended? And for Pittsburgh, letting Mike Tomlin step down after a third straight season, going 10-7 and losing in the wild card round, after nearly a decade without a playoff win, this also just feels like running in place. You gave up your high-floor, low-ceiling coach who is known for being pretty consistent and faltering out in the playoffs, and you traded him for a high-floor, low-ceiling coach who's been pretty good but inconsistent and fizzles out in the playoffs. So I don't think this is a great hire. I think it'll keep the ship right for a little bit and maybe put the Steelers on a new direction, but I can't see Mike McCarthy winning a Super Bowl. I'm happy he got the job. He said he's been a Steelers fan his whole life. He's been very enthusiastic about the position, but I don't see how this works for them. Next, John Harbaugh with the New York Giants. This is my favorite one to talk about because I absolutely trust it. I think that this hire is great, and I think that John Harbaugh is exactly what the New York Giants need. First of all, the culture. He comes into the program, and the first thing he says is he's here because he values the tradition of the team, the history of the team. He called them the New York Football Giants and said it's a team that his dad had always taught him to call it. I think that he knows how to run a program. I think that he is a very sound coach structurally. We know that he's smart when it comes to handling draft picks, when it comes to navigating difficult cap space situations. And for a Giants organization that has struggled so much recently on all of those ends, front office, draft, cap management, talent identification, all of it, bringing in new leadership is essential. And bringing in leadership with the experience and the skill that Harbaugh has is going to be even more beneficial for this team. What we have seen from Harbaugh over the last 15, 20 years has been an ability to elevate, to take a franchise, take teams that may be struggling, that may have glaring weaknesses, and overcome and show them how to win. Harbaugh is bringing in completely new staff. They just hired Matt Nagy this morning. We'll talk a little bit more about that later in the show. They're bringing in new offensive line coaches. They're bringing in new defensive coordinators, new assistant coaches, new positional coaches, everything. Even medical staff, who John Mara had previously mentioned were untouchable, are getting fired. So John Harbaugh has the reins to this team. He is going to put together fundamental structural change that will right the ship that is the New York Giants. Not to mention, this team does have talent. Jackson Dart showed as much promise as maybe any rookie quarterback has over the last few years. Cam Scadaboo and Malik Nabers, Tyrone Tracy, possibly retaining Wandale Robinson or drafting a receiver in the top five, gives them good skill position players as well for Dart to work with. That offensive line made a lot of improvement last year, not to mention the plethora of talent on the defensive front. A few changes to the secondary, a few changes to the offensive line, some more depth, some more reliability, some more discipline, and a better understanding of the game of football, and this Giants team, led by John Harbaugh, is going to take it over the top. All right, last. Jesse Minter with the Baltimore Ravens. I trust this hire, because as much as I trust John Harbaugh, I think the Ravens front office is still sound, even without him. I think that their process is intelligent. I think they know what they're doing. I think Minter has proven in Los Angeles that he is a mind for the game, that he is smart, and that he can work with a lot of different styles of players. I think that's exactly what Baltimore needs. I think they could use a little more juice on offense, so we'll see if they can bring in another offensive-minded guy on the staff along with Minter, who works on the defensive side. But I think this is an overall trust. All right. We're going to take another quick break. That's been a lot of football content. When we return, we're going to talk about LeBron. We're going to talk about the NBA trade deadline. And then we're going to wrap up with some last Super Bowl takes. Right back with you after this.
The University of Maryland Farmers Market can be found weekly at Taz Plaza. There are an abundance of producer-only vendors and a cooking demonstration, with free samples hosted every week at noon. You can find everything from fresh bread, locally grown produce, popcorn, to lip balm, and local animal products. The market runs every Wednesday, rain or shine, from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. during the spring season from April to May and fall season from August to November.
Are you a victim of the campus cough or other common symptoms of a cold or sore throat? The accredited University Health Center, located right across from the Stamp Union, can be of assistance. Make an online appointment at www.myuhc.umd.edu. You can receive primary care, reproductive health care, mental health care, dental health, immunization, and much more. What are you waiting for? Schedule your next appointment now.
All right, welcome back in. You are listening to WMUC FM Radio. My name is Jack Wynn. I am your host here on Winning Time, your favorite sports talk show here in College Park. So it's been a lot of football so far. I opened up the show with my prediction of Seattle defeating New England 27-3. Followed it up with some takes on the NFL Hall of Fame, Belichick, unjustifiably being snubbed, unless the motivation was to draw up conversation about his cheating scandals. Eli Manning snubbed once again from the Hall of Fame, and Drew Brees earned his spot. We also talked about some of the best head coaching positions in the NFL, but now we switch to basketball. So the Lakers played the Knicks last night. If I had to guess, it was LeBron's last game in Madison Square Garden, and it was a little bit underwhelming there at the end for him. What we have seen from LeBron this year is a bit melancholy for me, because I've been a big LeBron fan. I mean, he's meant so much to the league. He's meant so much to sports, to global marketing. He's spoken out politically, you know, for racial justice, for civil justice. He's just been a very influential factor, and you like to see him succeed naturally. And so kind of acknowledging here that your hero is falling, and Father Time, who we had thought had finally taken his first loss, appears to finally be coming back around. LeBron is averaging 22 points, 6 rebounds, and 7 assists this season on 50% shooting, 30% from the field, 74% from the free throw line. Those percentages are dropping. Those numbers are dropping. LeBron is still impactful on the floor. You know, you watch the games when he's able to put in that kind of effort and when he's able to get that burst for a short period of time, he's still really effective. And it looks like the LeBron we've seen the last few years, able to quickly get inside, able to, you know, lock up on defense if needed. But it's just very apparent both in his effort on the court and his comments after games that this is LeBron's last year and that we are witnessing some of the final games that he will play in the NBA. And that's sad. Now, the happy part is we get to be appreciative. LeBron just made yet another All-Star team. Was he probably deserving of an All-Star appearance? I would say maybe not. You can argue it. I'm a big LeBron fan, as I said, and even I would say he might not have deserved that All-Star spot, but you can't leave him off. We've seen over the course of NBA history, Michael Jordan's last year, they gave him an honorary All-Star bid. Kobe's last year, honorary All-Star bid. Dwayne Wade, Dirk Nowitzki, they all got honorary All-Star bids. You got to do the same for LeBron. But when you think about the rest of this season now, it changes things in two ways. And how LeBron responds to that, I think will determine what the last punctuation mark on his career is. Let me explain. LeBron could say, look, I'm retiring. I've started talking about that games. Like, you know, I don't really feel like watching film. I just want to hang out. You know, he's talking about drinking wine with his family and all that stuff. Joking about
certain things in basketball not being important, saying, look, yeah, I've played more minutes than anybody. I'm going to take time off. And he's never said any of this stuff before. It's all pushing it that way. The All-Star break is going to come, and LeBron's going to have a few weeks to rest. And when he returns, he's going to do one of two things. He's going to either continue on this route and take on a bit of the, you know, farewell tour vibe, start to acknowledge more all-time moments in his career over these next few weeks, disengage a little bit on the court, turn things over to Luka and Austin Reeves even more than he already has. Or he can turn it around one last time. I think there's a real chance that LeBron has been coasting a bit this season, yes, but it may have been with intention. We know players load manage games all the time. LeBron tends to save energy, and he'll load manage from possession to possession. He'll load manage, you know, at spots during the season. But I think that there's a chance he's been coasting a bit, putting things on the back burners for the first chunk of this year. And what I would like to see is coming out of the All-Star break, a LeBron who's locked in, who's motivated and focused. Because this Lakers team is very good. It's not great. And there are some really great teams in the West that they would have to compete with. And the Lakers are not there right now. They're just not. But if we see a LeBron over the next few weeks after the All-Star break start to turn up and play like his old self, then the Lakers can compete. I want to see LeBron make one last push for ring number 5, personally. Whether we get it, I'm not sure. Maybe he tries to do both, makes this push, and still, you know, talks about his career and retiring and whatnot, but we'll see what ends up happening. Some other NBA news. The trade deadline, very quickly coming up, and I think we're going to get a little less happening than people may expect. Starting with Giannis, my gut says he doesn't get traded. I don't think they're going to move him. I don't know which team is able to actually offer a package that is fair for Giannis that's still interested at this point. Giannis is in his prime. He's got a full season and then another one next year before his contract runs out. So this is a real investment for whoever trades for him. The trade deadline's this Thursday. The teams that are interested in Giannis right now reportedly are the Knicks, the Heat, the Warriors, and the Timberwolves. I simply don't see a world where the Timberwolves get him. I don't know what they could give up. And for the Bucks, it makes no sense to acquire guys like Jaden McDaniels or, you know, Julius Randle or any of that. It just doesn't make sense. For the Warriors, I don't think you trade Draymond Green. They may have some assets. I would like to see Giannis in Golden State, but I think it would just take so much. You have to trade Kuminga. I don't know if they have the picks. I thought Houston was his best chance because trading Şengün is the best asset that you can acquire, but Houston isn't interested in that. The Knicks are the biggest talk around the town to get Giannis, but once again, I don't think the resources are there. I don't think they want OG Anunoby for Giannis. I don't think they want Mikal Bridges or Karl Anthony Towns. I think if you're Milwaukee, you either want just an abysmal amount of young pieces and picks, or you want a guy who you can build around, like Şengün. I don't think any of these teams can provide that. The only other team that can is the Miami Heat, but they're not willing to trade Bam Adebayo for Giannis because, let's face it, if you're Miami, the only real reason to acquire Giannis would be to pair him with Bam. Otherwise, the team is, you know, really no better than Milwaukee is right now. So I don't think that gets done either. I would love to see him in Miami. Hey, I'm a Heat fan. I love Tyler Hero, but if we can move Hero, some of these young Bucks, and all of our picks for Giannis, I'd be stoked. Get him in this culture. Get him with Spo. I just don't think it's going to happen. I think he stays pat in Milwaukee, struggles a bit more, and then we see what happens this upcoming offseason. I do hope he gets traded. As NBA fans, you want to see the best players in the league playing in big games. We haven't seen Giannis play in a finals in a while. We haven't seen him play in a conference finals in a while. We are being robbed of that. Let's get him to a contender. Next is James Harden. who surprisingly demanded a trade the other day. And I'm just honestly so sick and tired of him. Like, I'm sorry, guys. James Harden's story, it's just bothered me at this point. I'm just done with it. He causes so much drama everywhere he goes. He is the epicenter of all of the problems that he creates in these organizations, without question. And he bounces from team to team, convincing teams to invest in him, and then bailing on them immediately. Houston he was with for a while. But when he demanded a trade and it didn't work out, it got so nasty at the end. He was screwing up the team's culture. He was forcing his way out. He was showing up, you know, overweight, out of shape, faking injuries, intentionally putting in low effort in games. Disgraceful stuff from a franchise leader. He says, take me to New York where I want to be with my friends. Great. He's with Kyrie and KD, fizzles out. 1 year later, he's gone again. That team had potential. People loved him. They were the media darlings. He couldn't handle it for one full season. Fine. Send him to Philadelphia. Pair him with Joel Embiid. Get him another MVP on his team. How does that turn out? Well, he chokes in the playoffs multiple times, and he asks out again. Now he's on the Clippers. Had a fine season last year. Had a fine start to this season. And where do we find ourselves? Now that things are bumpy, he is once again asking out. James Harden, at this stage of his career, does not have leverage anymore. Teams that are trading for him are not offering plentiful bounties like they will for Giannis. James Harden is old. He still, to this day, is a one-sided player. He is bad for the locker room. He brings drama everywhere he goes. Unless you need a real switch up or you're trying to just take on a contract to rebuild, I don't know why a team would trade for James Harden. The Cavs have been floated in those conversations. Apparently the Clippers want to trade Harden for Darius Garland, who's the Cavaliers' young, you know, up-and-coming guard. I don't know why the Cavs would do that. Why would you trade a young up-and-coming guard for James Harden? I'm sorry, I don't understand. We'll see what happens at the deadline. I think he gets moved, and if he doesn't get moved, there will be some other stories before then or after then. We'll see. All right. The last one is Ja Morant. And I don't think he gets moved either, especially now that there are medical concerns around some of his previous conditions and injuries and all that stuff from the past. I don't think a team is going to take a big risk on Ja Morant right now at the deadline. Most of the time, if you're trading for someone at the deadline, it's either because you're hitting a hard reset or you're trying to make a push for the playoffs. And a playoff team making a push right now doesn't really need Ja Morant with all of the other health factors going on. I wouldn't blame a team if they took the risk on him, because when Ja's healthy and when Ja's focused, he's one of the most explosive, exciting, and talented players in the NBA. But unfortunately, that's not often the case. I do expect a Grizzlies rebuild this offseason. I think that they move a bunch of these pieces. I think that they restart. I do think Ja moves in the offseason because a team will want to, you know, start building with some younger star pieces, and he would fit that exactly. But for now, I think we can expect Ja Morant to stay in Pat. All right. We're going to take a quick break. We've got about 10 minutes here left in our show. And when we return, we're going to finish up with football news. We're going to talk about the Giants hiring Matt Nagy. We're going to talk about Sam Darnold. And we're going to give you all of our hot takes and predictions for the Super Bowl. And wins winners. We're giving you our NFL honors picks right after this.
When might you be buzzed? When you suddenly love everything.
You guys, I love this song.
I love these nachos.
I love our kickball league. Ugh! I love this guy.
What's your name?
You know what I'd love? A ride when it's time to head out.
If you see a buzzed warning sign, call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
I love your car. Is this real leather?
All right, welcome back. Very important message there, guys. Never drunk drive. Never worth it. Especially in this age when we have, you know, cars you can literally order on your phone. But the NFL honors are being announced this week before the Super Bowl, which means it is my turn to give my votes and my picks, starting with the NFL. You know what? We'll work our way from the bottom up. Let's start with Offensive Rookie of the Year. And my vote, of course, goes to Jackson Dart. Look, Tet McMillan had a great season. Cam Ward showed some flashes. Tyler Shuck had a great stretch. But when you think of the most electric rookie from this season, it may have been Cam Scadaboo, but it was Jackson Dart. He made throws and plays that very few quarterbacks in the league can make. He had an unbelievable stat line, 24 touchdowns, 5 picks, not to mention he was a dynamic runner and dual threat. He was the best rookie this season. Tet was the most consistent rookie, but Dart was the best rookie. He deserves the award. All right. NFL Defensive Rookie of the Year. As much as I would like to say Abdul Carter because of, you know, Giants once again in that end of season stretch, you have to give it to Carson Schwesinger. I mean, he was just very solid for the Browns. He was a linebacker. He had a great year, great tackler, a real leader on that defense. Not a lot of other really great defensive rookies there to match. Not a lot of time needed to be spent on that one. We can move on. Defensive Player of the Year. This is one of the easiest bets ever, and it's Myles Garrett. He had one of the greatest seasons in NFL history. He broke the all-time sack record. He had like 20 sacks or 22 sacks by week 14. Just an unbelievable, all-time great, future Hall of Famer. Getting a Defensive Player of the Year award, he absolutely deserves it. Offensive Player of the Year, I would give to JSN. I think Puka had a great season, but JSN is this Seahawks offense. He doesn't have a Davante Adams on the other side of the field to pull coverage away. He is the entire passing game. He doesn't even have a Matt Stafford throwing to him. For most of the season, he paced 2,000 yards. For a lot of the season, he paced to break the all-time receiving record for a single season. He had more targets, more yards per target, passer rating when targeted. All of that, he was towards the top of those lists. He was the best offensive player in the season, straight up. Your coach of the year, I'm giving to another Seahawk, Mike McDonald. The Seahawks, okay, Mike Vrabel did a better job turning around the New England franchise, and that deserves a ton of credit. But I think the Seahawks are just the best coach team in the NFL right now. And I think that he is a much more well-rounded coach. He has won without having a superstar quarterback. And I think that the coaching and the discipline that Seattle has exhibited throughout the year is overwhelmingly impressive. So I'll give it to Mike McDonald. And the reason why is because my MVP pick, people have been debating Matt Stafford versus Drake May all year. I was a Rams guy the whole season. Those are my two teams that I thought would play in the Super Bowl. But I'm voting for Drake May. And I'm really surprised by how many people are voting for Stafford. First of all, on the note, I've got May winning MVP, so I'm saying he's the reason for the Patriots' success. That's why I'm giving Coach of the Year to McDonald. We have never had an MVP not win his division, at least not for a very long time. Even Adrian Peterson got in at 9-7. But Stafford, look, the Rams won 12, 13 games. They were great. They lost their division. They were a wild card team. The MVP of the league was playing on the road the entire playoffs. I'm sorry, that's not how it works. We reward winning in this league. You have to be the best team in your division. You can't be the third best team in your division. for that reason, I'm giving it to Drake May. He was unbelievable all season. The deep balls, the accuracy, the passer rating, the stats, the leadership, the composure, the clutch, all of it. It's what you want in a rookie quarterback. He had one of the biggest jumps from last year to this year in terms of impact on winning and, you know, ability as a player. I think Drake is the MVP. All right, some last hot takes before we wrap up. We've got about 3 minutes left here in the show. Giants hire Matt Nagy to be the offensive coordinator, and I got to say I was really disappointed. This was, I think, my last choice, like, to be so straight up with you. I was exhilarated when I thought we got Todd Monken because of his relationship with John Harbaugh, his ability to scheme an offense in a lot of different ways to build around the talent that he's given rather than forcing a scheme onto them. And then I wanted Cliff Kingsbury, a more modern style offense, an ability to consistently have a great running game, to try to make guys better who may not have the most talent. Then maybe, you know, one of these other new young up-and-comers who we haven't heard of. Matt Nagy is not the guy. He's probably a good offensive coach. I would imagine he knows what he's doing, but he has just seen a lot of disappointment and failure over the last few years. That offense in Kansas City has become a little stagnant. The offense with the Bears, when they drafted Mitch Trubisky and believed in him, fell apart. I don't love this hire. I think that Jackson Dart, Scadaboo Neighbors, those playmakers on offense can make it work regardless, and I think that Nagy will be good on a fundamentals level, but you need a coach who is going to elevate. And right now we have a coach that is going to steady the ship. I guess that's okay. It depends on what direction you want to take this team, but you got to believe in Jackson Dart no matter what. Justin Jefferson, the all-time superstar wide receiver for the Vikings this year, spoke out and said that had they retained Sam Darnold last season, they would have had a better year. And to that, they say, yeah, obviously. Sam Darnold's a really good quarterback, and the only reason the Vikings were terrible was because their quarterbacks were terrible. People have been asking if it was a bigger mistake for the Jets or the Vikings to let go of Sam Darnold. And I really don't blame the Jets for doing so. Sure, it's easy for Jets fans now to be like, oh, we had a guy who's so good now and he was on our team and we've been in quarterback, you know, purgatory forever. Fine. But the Vikings knew what he was. They saw him play really well. And because of a couple games at the end, they decided to bail and go with an unproven, injured quarterback. And it worked out terribly for them. Giving up Darnold, it was a mistake. They won 14 games. He threw for 4,000 yards the year before. And they said it wasn't good enough. They said they didn't think they could win a Super Bowl with him.